Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We just finished going through all of the Torah references to circumcision, including the one in Joshua, where we learned that before the Israelites were allowed to enter the Promised Land, they camped out, they were all circumcised, then celebrated a Passover, which is fitting, considering they were passing over a river at the time. So we're going to move on into the prophets. And speaking prophetically of the redemption and deliverance of Jerusalem, Isaiah declares in chapter 52, verse 1, "Awake, awake, put on your strength, O Zion, put on your garments of splendor, O Jerusalem, the set-apart city, for no more do the uncircumcised and the unclean come into you." So, again, not speaking, you know, to this, I'm speaking very much of physical circumcision, because these were a driving out the invaders, or not driving out, but, you know, this is prophetic, so, you know, Jerusalem being delivered, saying that there will be no uncircumcised people there. And it also equates being uncircumcised with being unclean. So, again, a negative use of uncircumcised, and again, this is in Yahweh's word. This isn't Isaiah speaking. Well, it is Isaiah speaking, but on behalf of Yahweh. You know, unlike the Barai Pauls that you read throughout his writings, Isaiah is always saying, Yahweh says, and this is something Yahweh had said and declared. So, again, speaking of Zion, which is Israel, in Jerusalem, the set-apart city, it says, no more do the uncircumcised and the unclean come into you. Like I said, this is prophetic of the redemption and deliverance of Jerusalem. So that would be after the Armageddon war and everything else in Yah's return. So there will be no uncircumcised thing. Moving on, in Jeremiah 4, we read, and again, I'm going to read from the Scriptures translation. Just because I haven't had time to amplify all these myself, I have looked at the most pertinent words to make sure they're not translated wrong. I've kind of done a once-over check on it, but I haven't actually translated it myself, so I'm just going to use theirs. And like I said, I do not recommend this one. It's just the, you know, best of a horrible lot. So we read, starting with Jeremiah chapter 4, we're going to read verses 1 through 4. "If you do return, O Israel, declares Yahweh, return to me. And if you remove your abomination from my presence and cease straying, and shall swear, as Yahweh lives in truth, in right ruling and in righteousness, the nations shall bless themselves in him, and they shall boast in him. For this is what Yahweh said to the men of Yehuda and to Jerusalem. Break up your tillable ground and do not sow among thorns. Circumcise yourself unto Yahweh, and take away the foreskins of your heart, you men of Yehuda and inhabitants of Jerusalem, lest my wrath come forth like fire and burn, with none to quench it, because of the evil of your deeds." So again, Yahweh is equating circumcision of the heart to returning to him, restoring your relationship, abandoning your evil ways, and returning to him. You know, so again, circumcision, this rhyme of the heart, you know, which we've, like I said, there is an argument to be made that, you know, we do need to be circumcised with the heart. It comes up a lot. It is important, but it is not as important as circumcision of the flesh, according to Yah. Because circumcision of the heart, well, you know, Yah says he will do it for us. We can also do it by turning away from, you know, politics, religion. But when we, you know, leave man's ways and follow Yah's, we are circumcising our hearts. You know, it's used to reference that. So then we read again, if you go to the sixth chapter of Jeremiah, and we'll start at verse 10, it reads, "See, the ear is uncircumcised, and they are unable to listen. See, the word of Yahweh is a reproach to them. They do not delight in it." And, you know, again, Arel, you know, so literally, the ear is stubborn, unrepentant, unhearing, and unresponsive. A very negative connotation is saying they don't see the word of Yahweh. They don't, you know, listen to Yah's word. It's actually a reproach to them. He calls their, you know, it's, again, this is the same as when Moshe referred to his lips as being uncircumcised. It's not that they're literally not cut, but that it's just this negative connotation. And again, this isn't like it was with Moshe saying it. This is Yahweh saying it. And find this whole second part. The word of Yahweh is a reproach to them. They do not delight in it. You know, this just reminds me of any time you debate a religious person and you try and cite Yahweh's word for them. They hate it. You know, they don't delight in it. They don't, you know, want to hear it. They're stubborn. They're unrepentant. They're unhearing and they're unresponsive. You know, I know you've had an incident like this fairly recently with people, you know, you care about, and you tried to bring up Yah's word and they got upset at you for bringing out a copy of the Torah to read to them. You know, they didn't delight in Yah's word. It was a reproach to them. You know, it would be fair to say that their ear is uncircumcised in Yah's parlance.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, it's being used by Yahweh in a very negative and, dare I say, derogatory sense. So being uncircumcised isn't just something, you know, a lot of the things you'll read, they try and explain this in terms of, you know, being uncircumcised was viewed by the Jews as the, you know, lesser thing, and it, you know, the Jews had this belief about it and this connotation, so it was a derogatory term for them. Which it was. Yeah, that's all 100% true. It was used as a derogatory term by Jews for others throughout history. But, like I said, you know, this isn't a Jew saying it. Well, I mean, I guess you could say it is. It's Yahweh. But, yeah, this is God saying it. This is his view, not just the Jewish people. This isn't a Jewish cultural view. This is Yahweh's view. So, that's Jeremiah 6:10. Moving on, you have Jeremiah 9. Where Yah says he will punish the circumcised and uncircumcised alike because they have forsaken his Torah. And this is important because, you know, while it is impossible to participate in Yah's family without being circumcised, just because you're circumcised don't mean you're part of his family. Yeah, you know, if you forsake his Torah, you can be, there are plenty of people who are circumcised and don't know Yah. You know, for example, my family circumcised me. My family was not part of their covenant. My family was not really religious at all. You know, as I tell people, my father's family was Catholic. My mother's was Lutheran. If religion was important to either one of them, I wouldn't be here because Catholics and Lutherans don't tend to get along. So, you know, I was not raised in a religious home, but my parents did circumcise me. That don't mean I was part of Yah's family from that point on. Yeah, I was not saved by circumcision. What this is saying is, while circumcision can preclude you from being part of the family, it does not guarantee admission. You know, you don't just get a snip and then you're done. You have, you cannot forsake his Torah. You have to embrace his Torah. You know, if you want to be a part of Yah's family, you have to embrace the covenant. You have to be part of the covenant. You have to embrace his Torah, walk his path, and, you know, part of that is being circumcised. So, while circumcision is not salvation, it does not save you, it can preclude you from salvation. And I get from this verse, you know, he's going to punish the circumcised and uncircumcised alike because they forsake his Torah. And his Torah is his covenant. All that. So, it's not going to save you, but it is necessary. Then we go to Ezekiel. In chapter 28, verse 10, Yahweh tells the prince of Zoar that he will suffer the death of the uncircumcised. Now, this is an interesting one because I had a little fun with this because I read this and I'm like, wow. And if you're reading the English translation, it says the death of the uncircumcised. But the fact is, death, moot here, was in the plural form, which means death, plural. And, you know, there's kind of two schools of thoughts I found when I looked this up as to what this phrase means. And, you know, I'll let you be the judge of what you think it means. But one school of thought says that it means an ignoble death, a dishonorable death, a horrible death. That is just, it was just a phrase being used to convey a really bad death. And the other school of thought is that it means a physical and eternal death. And if you read, there's a group of books called the Targum, and I don't recommend them in terms of being really worth anything other than what I was going to say is, if you read in there, their interpretation is the latter, that this means two deaths, a physical and eternal death. And the only reason I bring it up is because of the dating. And the Targums date to the early first, there's some, I believe there are some even found among the Dead Sea Scrolls. So like the first, second, centuries BCE. And so like I said, well, I don't think their interpretations tend to mean, you know, Jack, in my opinion. You know, it's basically the interpretations of a bunch of rabbis. It's Aramaic translations of the Torah, Prophets, Psalms with commentary added in. And, but my point is that this was the older version. This is how people of that time period tended to view this verse. The later, I didn't find anything other than late 18th century and on that had that interpretation, the ignoble death interpretation. So, you know, the one existed long before the other. And you, like I said, you're up there, you have two to choose from, but the fact that moot is in the plural to me supports the latter interpretation. Yeah, like I said, it's the death of the uncircumcised, meaning they would have, he will suffer a physical death and then an eternal death. You know, and this goes back to the whole concept of souls being mortal and dying. God told us that, you know, death and destruction is the wide path. And so his soul, this prince of Zor, will suffer both deaths. He will die physically, and then he will die eternally. His soul will die. Now, like I said, the ignoble death to me doesn't make sense. Why would God use the term move at all? Why would he use deaths of the uncircumcised if he was trying to say just a horrible death? Now, he has a way for that as well. He could have said he will die a bad death. He will die a wicked death, a cruel death. Yeah, he could have described it in any of those ways, but he chose to use the term death, plural, of the uncircumcised. So, like I said, I'm going to leave it up to you to determine what you think it means. And Patty, you can tell me what you think it means after the break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We left off, we were discussing Ezekiel 28, verse 10, and Yahweh telling Prince Azor that he will suffer the death of the uncircumcised. We were talking about how there are two ways of viewing this. One is that this just means a horrible or ignoble death, and the other is that it means a physical and then eternal death. And I was pointing out that the plural form of moot would support the latter, and that the latter is also the older interpretation. So if you read that, you know, in terms of this is a bad guy, yeah, that's the context. They were given a little bit of, you know, what this guy's done, and then we are told that he will suffer the death of the uncircumcised. How would you interpret that?
I would just say that he was going to just cease to exist.
Exactly. The two deaths. Physical death, his body will die, and then his soul will die. That, like I said, that's how I interpret it. You know, someone else may find another interpretation, but the ignoble death just doesn't make sense to me, because we are dealing with Yahweh, who is, in my opinion, the greatest communicator who ever lived. And if that was what he wanted to convey, he could have conveyed it. But I'll also point out, even if that weren't the case, the fact that he used the term, again, uncircumcised in a derogatory way would be, still not a triumph for those who argue that circumcision is unimportant. And this is one of those ones that I was talking about, I missed a lot the first time I went into this study because I didn't look up RL. So this one was there, and I came across this, and it was just like, wow. Y'all just told us that, those who are uncircumcised are dead spiritually. And that's the only way I can see to interpret that. So, we'll move on. Like I said, we're going to try and beat as many nails into this coffin as we can. And Ezekiel 32, verse 18, we read, "Son of man, mourn and lament upon the multitude of Mitzrayim, Egypt. She causes you to send her down, her and her daughters of the mighty nations, unto the below region, Hati Eret, of the lowest part, the region below the surface of the earth, the realm of the grave and death, descending, Yared, being lowered and brought down to the pit, bore, hole, or depression in the ground, a prison or a dungeon, a pit in the ground for prisoners, death, the figurative extension of a pit as a place of corruption. How are you more pleasant than others? Descend, be lowered and brought down, and lie down with the uncircumcised." Does that sound very good to you?
No.
Let's read that without any of the amplification. Let's make it a little clearer. Really, yeah, now, the amplification can get in the way sometimes and make it a little hard, especially on the air. When reading it, it's a lot easier, but when talking, it's a little harder. So, really, without the amplification. Son of man, mourn and lament upon the multitude of Egypt. She causes you to send her down, her and the daughters of the mighty nation, unto the below region, descending to the pit. How are you more pleasant than others? Descend and lie down with the uncircumcised. So that's pretty derogatory. He is equating the place of the uncircumcised, lying down with the uncircumcised, with pit, with descending to the below region. And, you know, by way of background, Mitzrayim was not a very good nation at this point. Egypt, Mitzrayim is the Hebrew word for Egypt. It means the crucible. You know, they've never exactly been a good nation throughout their history, but, you know, this is not a time of war and, you know, all that. So this was not, you know, these were not good people. They were being descended into this pit in the low region, which Yah equates to the place of the uncircumcised. And, you know, actually, if you read and go to Ezekiel 32, you'll find 9 more examples where uncircumcised is used in this chapter. 9 times. Well, 10 if you count this one, in one chapter. And it lists a group of people, all bad nations, you know, all nations that Yah is not too happy with, and it equates all of them to going to the pit, to going to Sheol, and to going to the, you know, literally the place of the going to the place of the uncircumcised. 10 times in this one chapter. Every single one of them is derogatory. Now, this doesn't... If you were to read the 32nd chapter of Ezekiel, you would not come away with the place of the uncircumcised as a place you want to be. Now, it equates it to the pit. It equates it to Sheol. You know, all these very bad things. Now, does that sound like a place you want to go?
No.
Me neither. So, yeah, like I said, 10 times, you know, go read through, and you'll find the same words are used in most English translations that I examine. Oh, welcome back to Shattering Myths. When we left off, we were examining Ezekiel chapter 32, and we had just read verses 18 and 19, but, you know, I was going to kind of skip over this and have people go read it, but I think it's, you know, it's bad enough and it's important enough, I'm going to go ahead and read through some of this, again, using the Scriptures translation. So starting in the 20th verse, we read, in the midst of those slain by the sword they fell. She shall be given to the sword, drawing her and all her crowd. The mightiest among the mighty speak to him out of the midst of the grave with those who help him. They have gone down, they lie with the uncircumcised, slain by the sword. Bashura is there in all her assembly, with the graves all around her, all of them slain, fallen by the sword. Whose graves are set in the side of the pit, and her assembly is all around her grave. All of them slain, fallen by the sword, because they instilled fear in the land of the living. There is Eliam, in all her crowd, around her grave, all of them slain, fallen by the sword. They have gone down uncircumcised to the lower part of the earth, because they instilled fear in the land of the living, and they bear the shame of those going down to the pit. They have set her bed in the midst of the slain, with all her crowd, and her with her graves all around it, all of them uncircumcised, slain by the sword, for the fear they instilled in the land of the living. So they bear their shame with going down to the pit. In the midst of the slain they have been placed. There are Meshech and Tubal, with all her crowd, with all their graves around it, all of them uncircumcised, slain by the sword, because they instilled fear in the land of the living. And they shall not lie with the mighty who are fallen of the uncircumcised, who have gone down to the grave with the battle gear, and those whose sword were laid under her head, under their head, but their crookedness are on the bones because of their fear of the mighty in the land of the living. And you shall be broken in the midst of the uncircumcised and lie with those slain with the sword. And it goes on. We'll keep reading. So we got a lot to read, so we'll go through it. And they shall not lie with the mighty who are fallen of the uncircumcised. 28. And you shall be broken in the midst of the uncircumcised and lie with those slain by the sword. There is Edom, her sovereigns, all her princes, who shall be given up in their might, those who are slain by the sword. With the uncircumcised they lie, and with those going down to the pit. There are princes of the north, all of them, and all of Sidonia, who have gone down with the slain because of the fear they instilled. They are ashamed of their might. They lie uncircumcised with those slain by the sword, and bear the shame with those going down to the pit. Pharaoh and all his army shall see them, and he shall be confronted for all his hosts that were slain by the sword, declares Yahweh. For I have put a fear in him in the land of the living, yet he shall be placed in the midst of the uncircumcised with those slain by the sword, Pharaoh and all his hosts, declares Yahweh. So, yeah, we just went through all this. Now, they're not saying that these people are going there because they were uncircumcised, but he calls it the place of the uncircumcised. Yeah, so not that they're there because they're uncircumcised. He lists why they're there, but he does call it the place of the uncircumcised. Which, how would you interpret that, Patty?
The place of the uncircumcised?
Yeah, he equates it to the pit and to Sheol and the grave. Could you read that and come to the conclusion that if you're not circumcised, y'all don't care?
Obviously not.
Exactly. All right, moving on, we come to, and I believe this is going to be our last example of circumcision being mentioned in the prophet. And that's Ezekiel chapter 44. We read, "And Yahweh said to me, Son of man, place on your heart, see with your eyes, and listen with your ears to all which I am saying to you concerning all of the statutes of the house of Yehuda and concerning his entire Torah. Place it in your heart. On the path and entrance to the household, and with regard to you setting forth from the temple, and you shall say to the rebellious one, to the house of Yisrael, that is what my foundation, the upright pillar, Yahweh, says. Your greatest, most detestable abomination of all, in all of the house of Yisrael, is including sons of foreigners, uncircumcised of heart, and uncircumcised of flesh, to exist in my temple, to defile and profane it, and him, alongside my home, in your coming near and approaching my bread, my finest and choicest oil and wine, and my blood, you broke my family-oriented covenant relationship. By all your detestable abominations and not closely and personally observing the required functions of my set-apart and purifying one. And you were appointed to personally and carefully observe this required function concerning my temple on your behalf. Thus says my foundation, the upright pillar, Yahweh. Every foreigner, son, who is uncircumcised in heart and in the flesh shall not be included inside my temple." That's Ezekiel chapter 44, verses 5 through 9. Now, this one's an important reading because, one, we have God both of circumcision of heart and flesh. So that answers the challenge that, you know, oh, circumcision of the heart, what matters, flesh doesn't matter. Now, here he's saying it's both. Now, the challenge I hear most on this verse is that, well, what God's condemning them for is the Levites or the Lowies shucking their job and, you know, passing it on to foreigners, which is true. That in the context of the historical aspects of Ezekiel's time, that was what happened. They had kind of shirked their job and had brought in these foreigners to do it for them. And part, yeah, that is part of what Yahweh is condemning them for, is not doing the job they said, you know, their job that they were assigned. But where this gets really interesting is the last verse. You know, every foreign son who is uncircumcised in heart and in the flesh shall not be included inside my temple. Now, people will say, okay, well, I'm not a Lowy. I don't need to be in there doing all that stuff anyways. And that's not all that important. But when you go look at what ties this together and makes this seem really important, or not seem, but makes this really important, is if you go to Revelation and the third chapter, verse 12, you read, "All who are victorious will become pillars in the tabernacle of my God, in the temple of my God, and will never leave it, and I will write on them my name. So how are you going to be a temple or a pillar in the temple, in the tabernacle of God, if you're not allowed in there? I see you don't have an answer for that. Neither do I. If you're not in, you know, if you can't enter the temple because you're not circumcised, it's kind of hard to be a pillar in it. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
So that's why that one, like I said, yeah, that one's important for the two reasons. It, you know, it points out that, you know, circumcision of flesh and heart are important, and then, you know, you. You know, if you're not in the temple, you can't be a pillar of the temple. And God said all those who are victorious will become pillars in the tabernacle. So kind of sums it up right there. And that's all of the mentions we have of circumcision or uncircumcision in the Torah and Prophet. Now, I left out anything related to Judges and Chronicles, where Ovel does come up a few times, because the nature of those texts is they're not Yahweh speaking, although he does speak in them occasionally. But you know, it's just a different nature than the prophet in the Torah, which is God speaking. But I checked several of the verses in there, if not every one, I'm not sure now. It's been a couple weeks since I did this. But and not one of them was in a positive way either. But most of them were being uttered by Israelites and would fall under the, you know, that was a Jewish colloquialism. Which it was, and you know, it was used as a derogatory term by the Jews, and that's what you find in those. So all I looked at was the Torah and the prophets, and again, I may have missed some. I didn't sit there with a Hebrew copy of the Torah and prophets and go through and look for the word mole and arel in every one. What I did was use logos and did a search for them, and I have seen in the past where it does miss a thing or two. For whatever reason, it's, you know, not perfect software. So if I did, you know, I'm apologizing. You know, please send me that. And I'd love to correct it and add it in, because I do plan on writing this up as a small document to include on the Yada Yada forum. But the fact that we have, I think, close to two dozen verses, or not verses, but sections we've read from today, you know, last kind of it was something like 24, 25 sections. You know, most of them mentioned it in multiple verses, but at least, you know, not one of them. You know, did we read anything today that put uncircumcision in a positive light or circumcision in a negative light?
No, I'd say it was fairly consistent.
Yeah, fairly consistent throughout. And, you know, it's like people argue, you know, how do you know that, you know, this is trustworthy? Yeah, with all the changes that have been made, you know, what I hope. God kind of put a mechanism into his word that kind of self-governing. People can corrupt it here and there, but he repeats himself a lot. So much to the point where that, you know, when you come across something that is completely inconsistent with everything else, you kind of take a closer look and you usually figure out where it got corrupted. And like I said, if there are any I missed and there happens to be one that does put it in, you know, uncircumcised in a positive light or circumcision in a negative light, I would be very skeptical of it, and I would love to examine it closer. So that's all of those, and we don't really get a whole lot of mention of circumcision in the Greek text, at least not from Yahusha. If I remember correctly, I lost my notes on that, but if I remember correctly, his only mention of it was in relation to circumcising on the Sabbath, when he's telling, you know, people are arguing that he shouldn't kill on the Sabbath. He equates it to, you know, do we not circumcise on the Sabbath? And of course, you know, on the eighth day, if a child is born, and on the eighth day it happens to be a Sabbath, we still circumcise him. So again, Yahusha confirming circumcision on the eighth day. I don't believe he mentions it ever again. I could be wrong. It comes up a few times. What?
Oh, I was just going to say, in that one where, I'll ask you when we come back.
Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're in the final segment of the show today. I actually wasn't sure we'd get through everything I had prepared. We got through every verse related to circumcision or uncircumcision. I also had a list of challenges I was going to try and get to, but I think we addressed most of them on the way along the way. And really, challenges are negated when you look at what Yah said. There really isn't a challenge to be made. But we were discussing before the break, Yahush says to you, and I said the only time I think I remember him mentioning circumcision was that it was to be done on the, you know, it was okay to circumcise on the Sabbath. That was why he, it was okay for him to heal on the Sabbath. But you were going to say something about that, Patty.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think I was just going to agree with you.
Okay.
I can't really think of anything to add to it. I'm sorry.
You're okay. Now, I was going to say, though, it does come up a couple times in Acts, and that's in relation to Paul and, you know, whether or not, you know, his view that you don't need to be circumcised. And we see at the Jerusalem Summit, there's a whole debate on that. And, you know, one of the things there people love to point out is that after that, they sent out this letter to people telling them what they should do upon, you know, newly entering the, you know, the way. And that, oh, well, circumcision isn't on there, therefore they were saying that you don't need to be circumcised to participate. But what they tend to ignore is that if you read right after that, they conclude with, because Moshe and the Torah are taught in everywhere in the world, and if they want to know that, they can come to know it themselves. In other words, they were kind of doing what Yada does and what I like to do, which is, don't take my word for it, go look what Yah said. You know, they kind of like, yeah, they did not want people doing what they're doing now, which is following what they say. They were like, yeah, there's some basic instructions, but go observe the Torah. Go look to God. He knows the right way. So that's the only real mentions of it you get in the Greek text, and that's where the whole debate comes from. But like I said, if you read through what we read through, which is every mention of circumcision in the Torah and prophets, there's no way to come to a conclusion other than Yah wants you to be circumcised. The only reason any debate exists on this is because of Paul. So, that's it. Let's try and hit a few of these challenges real quick. One I hear a lot is that, you know, circumcision is a sign of a change and that the change is more important than the sign, but if you want to get this, you know, the sign, you can. And, you know, that goes back to the whole circumcision of the heart versus circumcision of the flesh, and that circumcision of the heart's more important. And we already addressed that. That, you know, what God's saying is, no, this isn't just a sign. This is a must. You know, you can't participate in Passover without it. You've nullified the covenant if you're not circumcised. You know, you can go on and on. There's no debate there. That's a no starter. Let's see. We have, what about a person who is unable to be circumcised for medical or monetary reasons? People will ask that a lot. And, you know, one, I've known several people who, you know, I don't know of any medical reasons that would prevent you, but I'm sure, you know, I can't think, like I said, I don't know that there are any. Monetary, I know, you know, two or three people now who are in their 80s living on a very fixed income who found a way to go get this done because it was that important to them. And, you know, like I said, it's that desire is what Yah looks for. And, you know, say you're planning to go get circumcised. You decided you want to accept the covenant, and you're on your way to get circumcised, and you're hit by a diesel and you die. Is God going to keep you out of heaven because you weren't able to get physically circumcised? No. Yeah, it goes back to that stubborn, unresponsive. You were responsive. Yeah, you were doing it. You were responding to what he said. You know, just because you weren't able to get it done in time, you know, I don't believe that he's going to keep you out of heaven. That said, you know, who knows? Yeah, another one, what if you were circumcised but not in accord with the Torah? Do you need to be recircumcised? No. You know, there were plenty of nations that were around Israel and that traveled with Israel that were practiced circumcision. And, you know, if you were circumcised and you wanted to participate in the Passover and join with them, it didn't say you had to go be recircumcised. It just said as long as you were. So why you were circumcised isn't important to God. The fact that you got, that you do it. You know, that if you're not, that you do, and that you do your sons, that's what's important. Whether you were done for medical reasons or something else, it's not that important. And I think that's all we're going to be able to get to today. We'll be doing, studying the Mikra starting tomorrow.